on me the weed fly.
I use the most expensive hair color in the world because I'm worth it.
Now repeat after me. Oils is oils.
No. Oils eat oils.
If you've got a healthy appetite.
They're right.
I'd like a whole grain cereal, but nothing too heavy. Or light.
The slogan.
Take those bodies.
The hairspray that leaves hair feeling like hair.
Matter of fact, I got it now.
Sick of Rex.
Hello and welcome to the final episode of Talking Shop, a series where we've been joyriding through the annals of consumer psychology and behaviour to get to the bottom of why you buy what you buy and in a, we hope, not altogether futile effort to help you buy better. I'm Kirsten Drysdale and I'm joined, as always, by Dr. Paul Harrison, our resident consumer behaviour sensei.
It's been a pleasure to be yours and our listeners, sensei Kirsten-san.
It's just that you're so very zen about all this marketing manipulation.
I learned a long time ago to be like a duck.
Stay calm on the surface. Okay. Yes. Well, look, today's episode is all about how fear is used to get us to buy things. So zenness is probably the perfect character trait for this topic. Let's start with an ad from Kotex for one of the most terrifying thoughts of all, groin sweat patches.
89% of you say sweat is good. 81% say sweat patches are not. You buy Kotex sport liners are specifically designed for sport, with a sweat dry core to help wick away moisture. So you can sweat without sweating it. Grab your free sample at You Buy Kotex.
Oh my God, women sweat?
Like pigs, Paul.
But hang on, my understanding is that pigs don't actually sweat very much at all.
Exactly. But that ad, which showed a number of women being mortified by the appearance of sweat patches in their groin region while exercising, would have you believe that these sweat patches are A, a common problem, and B, so humiliating that the only way to avoid them is to buy Kotex sports liners.
Well, it is a textbook approach. The simplified consumer behaviour model that we use in marketing starts with this idea of identifying a problem and then perhaps accentuating it. So that's all that Kotex have done. They've taken something that may not really be an issue for most people, particularly people at the gym, and turned it into a problem that can be solved with a product that they just happen to make.
Frankly, I think they've made this one up entirely. But Paul, you do know quite a bit about this tactic and you actually made a great short film about it. And before we hear a bit from there, could you tell us a bit about the story behind the film?
So I was researching the psychology of in-home sales. So this is a little bit different from door-to-door sales in that the salesperson uses a series of tactics over time. So they might initially offer you some kind of prize for your contact details.
Okay. So now is that like where there's a win a car at the shopping centre if you sign up and give us your name and number?
Yeah, exactly. And another technique they used was to have these forms in fish and chip shops. So, you know, very benign. Then they'd contact you for a visit by a representative, what they called a representative. And then they'd visit you and undertake what ended up really being a sales pitch.
Right. Okay. Now let's play a bit from Shutting the Gate, which is the name of the film. And these are all direct quotes from these salespeople, right?
Yep, yep. And for this particular product, which is maths software, the salespeople, first of all, create a huge amount of fear amongst parents when they don't feel like they're in control of their child's education. So the script that these salesmen had to learn, so they had a script, was very orchestrated and it was all about gaining initially the parents' trust. And so the clip starts with the salesman talking to the camera and then we hear him talking to the parents.
The first part of this presentation is kind of build the anxiety in the first part.
It's a little bit like laying bricks to build a wall. We're missing a couple of bricks. Those two missing bricks are going to affect the learning year by year as we go on.
It's kind of build the need.
And you want her to reach her potential. That's right.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
And the second part is when you come in and you solve the anxiety.
He started filling out the forms and basically I just went, yeah, sign me up.
The sales routine is, as we were trained, is what's known as the sheep paddock. Moving people through the gates, closing them behind them, till the only gate left open is the one I'm offering. The only gate left open is the one where you buy the product.
Okay, now, Paul, this idea of marketers inventing a problem, then creating a product or service to solve that problem isn't new, and a lot of us are sort of literate consumers who understand that much these days.
Uh-huh.
But that clip provides us with a very acute example of how our decision-making process changes when we're in an anxious frame of mind.
Yeah, one way to think about it is to ask how we make choices when we're fearful. So George Lowenstein, who's a researcher from Carnegie Mellon University, first talked about choice under uncertainty to be an issue about how people feel as opposed to how they think about their choice at the moment of decision-making. Mm-hmm. He called it the risker's feelings hypothesis, in that it's our emotional reactions that often drive behaviour rather than some calculated, thoughtful decision-making process.
So at the very moment when that woman is sitting right there in her house with the salesman next to her at the dining room table thinking about her child not getting a good education, she's not really weighing up what he's offering her in a rational way.
Nope, not at all. And we often allow our immediate emotional response, that visceral response, to influence how we even cognitively assess it. So, for example, if I'm worried about ageing, which I'm not.
No, neither am I.
Of course not. I'm more likely to evaluate how I emotionally feel about it than whether it's a rational thing for me to be worried about. And that's why they show men's moisturiser advertisements during the football on TV.
And presumably also why they show the KFC bucket when a try is scored?
No, that's just dumb sponsorship.
Is it though? Because I've heard from people who are way too smart to fall for it and actually have gone and bought a KFC bucket because they saw it on the ad.
Really?
Yeah.
Was KFC near their house?
No, I don't think it would have been, and I'm not going to name names, but they did work on the Gruen transfer once, so they should have known better.
Okay,
so there's being scared into buying things because marketers create hypothetical scenarios that we want to avoid, but there's also some more recent research around what's called incidental fear. That is a sense of fear that actually has nothing to do with the message a brand or product is trying to convey, but which actually enhances emotional brand attachment in a brand. Now, I thought advertisers were supposed to avoid associating their products with negative emotions like fear.
Yeah, there's some different perspectives on this. Probably the best way to think about this is that heightened emotions all tend to create an environment where the emotion becomes associated with whatever other information is happening being processed at the same time. So if I'm watching a horror movie and I'm scared, and if the brand is incorporated into the film, then my memory tends to associate that heightened emotional response, but not necessarily the specific fear response, with that brand.
Does this mean shop assistants are going to start sneaking up behind us to give us a fright?
Probably not, but I do know that David Jones is in trouble, so maybe it's worth considering.
It's the way out.
Mm-hmm. And another study published just last month went a bit deeper and found that people who experienced fear, and in this case they were watching films like The Ring and Salem's Lot, felt a greater emotional attachment to a brand of soft drink. I mean, the researchers argued that this was because fear creates a motivation to form an attachment to something. In this case, sadly, a brand of soft drink.
Oh, it's nowhere near as cuddly as an old teddy bear.
I do wonder if you can cuddle a brand. The attachment to the brand in relative terms, though, was quite weak. It's statistically significant for anyone who's interested in the stats, while the sad, happy and excited conditions didn't have any effect at all.
Right, so fear trumps all.
Yeah, it's a survival thing.
Sort of like the bonding that can happen between people who go through very stressful situations together, like natural disasters or terrorist attacks.
Yep, and plenty of research in psychology has shown that the greater the threat, the greater the person's tendency to want to affiliate with people that they perceive to be like them, and perceive is the operative word here.
All right. Now, although this research around incidental fear and brand attachment has only come out very recently, it seems Doritos had a bit of foresight when they ran a campaign a few years ago called Hotel 626. Now, this was an online virtual reality game set in a haunted hotel targeted at teenagers. So let's hear a little bit from it.
When Doritos brought back two flavors from the dead, something dark came back with them. Everything's scarier at night. That's why Hotel 626 is only open from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. You're living a nightmare in a 3D world never before seen in a website. And you have to do whatever it takes to get out. Like taking a picture of a psychopathic maid, singing a demon baby to sleep, and making it out of a madman's cell.
You made it out. but we'll see you again in the darkness.
So, as you could probably tell by the sound effects, it was an immersive horror movie experience, and according to the creators of the campaign, the site fostered greater participation by enabling a webcam to trigger head-tracking technology so that you can dodge left and right, avoiding the frenzied lunges of a chainsaw-wielding attacker. A picture is also taken of your face, and using distortion mapping, later shows you as a reflection in a sink of dirty water.
Oh my goodness, and it was an incredibly successful campaign, and it was designed to completely bypass parents.
And it was legitimately scary if you actually played the game.
Yep.
And what I found quite interesting about all of this, Paul, is that the campaign was considered a huge success. They sold out of these new Back from the Dead flavours. More than 4 million people in 136 countries played the game. It won the Cyber Lion Award at the Cannes Marketing Awards in 2009. But at no time within the game do you see the products, the packets of Doritos chips, anywhere.
Well, and I think the fact that the brand wasn't mentioned was a critical part of the campaign. So teenagers are desperately trying to create their own identity. So while they're having a blast freaking themselves out in this game, their unconscious brains were seeking out more information about the game and who was promoting it. They weren't necessarily conscious that their brains were making all of these connections, but because of what we know about fear, they were more receptive to information about the brand and were more likely to be forming an attachment to the brand.
Right. And they actually did end up using Doritos products in the sequel to Hotel 626. This time it was a game called Asylum 626. And for Asylum 626, to access the final scene of the game, you had to hold up a special code that was printed on bags of Doritos to the webcam.
Yeah, it's clever. And it means then that the people had to buy the Doritos and eat the Doritos and even then further cement that experience with their heightened emotional state.
This is Talking Chop with Kirsten Drysdale
and Paul Harrison.
And we've been talking about how fear is used by marketers to get us to buy things. But in all fairness, we should also talk about how fear can be used to pressure us into doing things that are actually good for us, like getting tested for kidney disease, avoiding unprotected sex, or choosing sunblock over a plain moisturiser.
Oh man, this is a real Pandora's box. There are a couple of different perspectives around whether fear actually works in changing behaviour, especially in areas where we see a lot of fear campaigns like quitting smoking and eating healthily. So some research actually suggests that fear in these types of campaigns creates a flee response. So what that means is that often the target market for these campaigns actually create psychological defences so that they can ignore the message.
Right, a little bit like, all right, if you're going to tell me I'm going to die, I'm going to run away.
Yeah, yeah. But a recent paper in the Journal of Consumer Research called Depletion Heightens Self-Protective Behaviour in the Face of Danger.
Catchy.
Suggested that fear can work for good under certain conditions.
Well, I think we're going to need a little lesson in what that word depletion means. Paul, can you help us out?
Sure. So it's well established in psychology that people have limited resources to manage self-control, to resist those kind of impulsive or implicit responses. And when our energy to resist is depleted, then we have less self-control. And depletion can be something as benign as being given a simple mathematical task, being given too many choices, going for a run, noisy environments like shopping centres, resisting eating food that you know isn't good for you, or even just being tired.
Okay, so anytime you're a little bit distracted or overwhelmed in some way, whether it's screaming kids or loud music, whatever it is, you are depleted.
Yes, and depletion begets depletion. So the more you try to resist something, the less resources you have to continue to resist it and other impulses. One really interesting study found that athletes performed worse after they'd been given a mathematical task. So it affects mental and physical effort.
Oh, I hope they weren't mathletes. All right, so that's the sort of psychological state these researchers induced in people before running these experiments to see what happened, to see whether they'd engage in self-protective behaviours. And what did happen?
Well, in the research, they found that the depleted participants as opposed to the non-depleted participants.
Okay, so that's the worn-down people versus the fresh people.
Yes, were less likely to engage in risky behaviours like having unprotected sex and more likely to engage in risk reduction behaviours like getting tested for chlamydia or kidney disease.
Right, so wearing them down and letting the impulsive response take over actually resulted in good decisions.
In this particular case, and there's research in neurology that actually supports this in that the depletion shifts the regulatory balance away from the frontal regions where all of the processing, the executive functions go on, to the left amygdala, which is the part of the brain that's involved in detecting danger and self-protection.
All right, let me try to translate that. When you are a bit overwhelmed, you're less likely to make decisions using the sensible calculator part of your brain and more likely to use the instinctive don't let the lion eat you part of the brain.
Exactly. But there are some caveats, the most important being that it wouldn't work in situations where there are other forces competing with the appropriate behaviour. So, for example, it probably wouldn't work if you're trying to get people to quit smoking.
Is that because so much of smoking behaviour is about, like, the social pressure to fit in?
Yeah, and in that situation, the key self-protection mechanism is more related to protecting the social self rather than the relatively abstract personal health self.
Right, so it's about self-protection in a sense.
Yeah.
All right, so in short, fear is a really great way of targeting our impulsive responses, and this can be used for good reasons, like making us get a health check, or it can be used for reasons like making us buy more Doritos. This has been the final episode of Talking Shop with Kirsten Drysdale and Dr. Paul Harrison from Deakin University.
To use the name my kids call me.
All about how fear is used to encourage us to buy things. Now, we don't want to leave you feeling too terrified though, do we, Paul?
Is it at all reassuring to say that this is a well-practiced deceit by marketers?
No, not really.
Well, they've been doing it for a really long time to sell us all sorts of products like antibacterial soap, permeate-free milk,
deodorant, fat-free lollies, vitamins,
four-wheel drives, mouthwash, sports drinks, even politicians. The list is endless.
And you might think you're immune to all of this, that you're sensible, you don't fall for those tricks, but the evidence shows that we all do. Even the most rational among us are prone to letting our emotions rule our wallets.
I mean, if you listen to the marketers, you'd probably come to the conclusion that the world is a very scary place.
So before you buy anything, take a deep breath, relax, look around you, see there's no lion coming after you, and ask yourself, is this something I really need or want to pay for?
Give yourself some time. Don't always go with your immediate emotional response.
But don't always ignore your emotions and intuition.
Because sometimes the best experiences can come out of spontaneity.
Straightforward as ever. Well, that's it for Talking Shop. We hope you've enjoyed the series. If you've missed any episodes, you can download them on the RN website, where there's also a bunch of articles to go with each one. Thanks again, Paul, for all your expert advice.
And thanks to you too, Kirsten. It's been lots of fun.
So long and shop well. Car ma vie.